and cream. Her downward gaze meant that all Roland could see of her fair blue eyes was a soft curtain of lashes drifting over them. In those days, her full lips had two expressions, the pout they clung to now, and the brief gift of a smile she sometimes bestowed on Roland. Both were desirable. Both did strange things to him. She shifted in the hay, feigning boredom, but feigning it poorly. She was transfixed by his every movement. He could see that now.
"I do have one more trifle. Should my lady like to hear it?" his past self said.
Roland recalled the eager tilting of his past self's chin and burned with shame. Now he remembered why she had taken so much convincing to agree to meet him in the barn. All he did was assault her with bad poetry. The boy on the stool did not wait. He clearly could not wait for Rosaline's ladylike groan. And when Roland launched into his gruesome verse, no one would ever have guessed that this failed sonneteer had once been the angel of music.
"Snowy peaks are sub-sublime compared to dazzling Rosaline. Soft-eyed kittens are unkind in the lap of Rosaline. As a poem's made of lines, so am I of Rosaline. They that toil to sheaf and bind, then to cart with Rosaline. As a nut transcends the rind, such a nut is Rosaline. He that mysteries would find, first must eyeball Rosaline."
At the end, Roland looked up to see Rosaline's face pinched into a frown. He remembered it now, struggled to endure it a second time, and felt the same heaviness in his stomach, like an anvil falling off a cliff. She said,
"Why do you infect me with such clumsy verse?"
This time, in his memory, Roland heard it in her voice. Of course, she was teasing him. He should have known it when she reached for his hand and drew him down onto the hay with her. His heart had been hammering too loudly for him to hear her implication, which now, clearly, was, "Shut up and kiss me." And how he had kissed her. That first time their lips connected, something ignited within Roland, as if his soul had been electrified. His body had gone rigid with the effort of trying not to mess a single thing up. His lips were welded to hers, but limply. His hands were two claws glued to her shoulders. Rosaline writhed against his grip, but for the life of him, he could not move. At last, she let out a sweet giggle and snaked free from his arms. She leaned backward in the hay, her pink lips pursed and off-limits once again. She eyed him the way a child eyes an out-of-favor toy.
"That lacked grace."
Roland lurched forward on his knees, his hands planted in the rough hay.
"Shall I try again? I'm certain I can do better."
"Well, I should hope so."
Her laugh was coy and elegant. She leaned away, just long enough to tease him, then lay back in the hay and closed her eyes.
"You may try again."
Roland inhaled deeply, drinking in the sweetness of every part of her. But just as he was about to bestow another awkward kiss, Rosaline pressed a hand against his chest. She must have felt his heart race, but she didn't let on.
"This time," she instructed, "not so stilted, more fluidity. Think of the flow of a poem. Well, perhaps not your poems. Perhaps your favorite poem by another. Throw yourself into my kiss."
"Like this?"
Roland all but fell on top of her, rolling to the side, and finding himself face first in the hay. He turned toward her, flushed. Side by side they lay, facing one another. She took his hands. Their hips were touching through their clothes. The tips of their feet kissed without embarrassment. Her face was inches away from his.
"You missed my mouth."
Her lips parted in an alluring smile.
"Roland, love means not being afraid to let yourself go, trusting that I will desire everything you have to offer. Do you understand?
Yes, yes, I understand, Roland breathed,
shimmying closer for his next attempt. His lips and his hands and his heart were nearly bursting with expectation. Tentatively, he reached for her.
Roland? What is it now? Hold me tight, sir. You won't break me.
As he kissed her, it seemed to Roland that not even the call of Lucifer himself could have forced him to let that fair maiden go. He would follow her advice 1,000 times with other ladies in the future, and sometimes he would feel something, but never for long, and never, never like this.
3. Counsel with Darkness.
Roland came awake, feeling queasy and lost. The sweet memory of loving Rosaline was slipping away. He touched his throbbing head and realized that he was lying on the ground. Slowly, he rolled to his feet. He ached something ugly, but nothing that wouldn't repair itself given time. He glanced back up at the balcony. He'd never have fallen from it in the old days. Probably shouldn't have worn full armor. He was getting rusty. How many times had he climbed this very wall in anticipation of meeting her? How many times had Rosaline's long blonde hair beckoned him like Rapunzel's locks? Usually, when Roland reached the balcony, she would be waiting, purely elated to see him. She would cry out his name in a hushed whisper, then bound into his arms. She would feel so light, so delicate against him, her skin scented with rose water from her bath, her body almost humming with the power of their secret love. Roland shook his head. No, their courtship had not been all joy, pure and bright. One dark memory tainted the rest. It was the last memory he had of her. It came in the 3rd season of their secret courtship, as the world around them turned toward fall, and the greens of summer burned away in a riot of flaming oranges and reds. Together, they planned to run away, to escape her father's rule, as well as the prejudices of a society that wouldn't allow a nobleman's daughter to be married to a Moor. Roland had gone away from his love for 1 week, under the guise of making plans for their new life. But it had been a lie. He'd gone to seek counsel on the real problems that lay before them. Would she still love him if she knew? And could he keep his nature secret from her and still give her a happy life? Really, there had only been one person to turn to. He found Cam at the southern tip of the islands that would one day be called New Zealand. Back then, both islands were completely untouched by man. The Maori wouldn't reach the land for another 50 years, so Cam had the whole place to himself. As Roland flew, the cliffs threatened, as sharp as daggers, unlike any he had seen before. The winds bore treacherously down on his wings, tossing him among the clouds. He was shivering and soaked by the time he reached the vast, pristine sound where Cam was hiding from the universe. The water was a mirror for the mountains, which were green with beech woods. Dipping a wingtip in the water as he passed over its surface, Roland found it icy cold. He shivered and kept on. At the far end of the sound, he landed on a slate-gray boulder that faced an unfathomably tall waterfall, whose heights were hidden in mists. At its base lay Roland's fallen angel brother, letting his wings be pummeled by the falling water. What was Cam doing? And how long had he been lying there, in this water torture chamber of his own making?
Cam!
Roland shouted his name 3 times before he gave up and waded in to pull his brother out. Feeling someone else's touch, Cam flailed and clung to the rocks where he'd lain. But then he recognized Roland and let himself be dragged out, suspicion sharp on his face. Roland hauled them both onto a rocky ledge behind the falls. It was hard work, and it left him panting, soaking wet and frozen to his core. The ledge was shallow, but there was enough room for both of them to stand on the damp stone. It was eerily quiet there, just behind the roar of the water. Exhausted, Roland staggered backward until his wings met rock, then slid down and sat.
"Go home, Roland."
Cam's green eyes looked dazed and disoriented as he propped himself up on one elbow. His naked body was one sickly purple bruise from the waterfall's ceaseless beating. But worst of all, his wings. They were shot through with new gold fibers. Roland couldn't help admiring how brilliantly they shimmered under the moonlight.
"So it's true."
Roland had heard the rumors that Cam had crossed over to Lucifer's side. Neither demon seemed capable of mustering the ritual reserved for greeting new members of the fold. They were meant to embrace, thread their wingtips together, as an expression of each one's acceptance of the other, the acknowledgement that they were safe and among friends. Cam stood, walked over, and spat in Roland's face.
"You lack the strength to haul me back into service. Have Lucifer come here himself if he feels I've been neglectful."
Roland wiped his face and pulled himself to his feet. He reached for Cam, but the demon flinched away.
"Cam, I didn't come here to... I came here to be alone."
Cam moved to a dim corner of the ledge, where Roland could now see a small pile of garments and bags, Cam's few possessions. Roland thought he recognized the parchment scroll that could have been his marriage agreement, but Cam quickly flung a shaggy sheepskin cloak around his body and tucked the parchment into a deep pocket inside.
"Oh, you're still here?"
"I need advice, Cam."
"On what? Living the good life?"
Cam's spark had come back, but it seemed garish in this pale, shadowy specter standing before Roland.
"Start by finding yourself a deserted island. This one's taken, but there must be more out there, somewhere."
He flung his hand out of the world, at Roland.
"I love a mortal woman," Roland said very slowly. "I want to shape my life around her."
"You don't have a life. You're a fallen angel on the other side. You're a demon."
"You know what I mean."
"Take it from me. Love is impossible. Get out and save yourself the heartache."
In that moment, Roland realized he'd been foolish to go to Cam for advice. And yet, he'd had to come. Cam's love story hadn't worked out, but he still understood what Roland was going through.
"Perhaps you could tell me what not to do?"
"All right," Cam said, taking a deep, shuddering breath.
"Fine. Do not demean yourself by living a lie. Do not ask me if she will love you if she finds out what you are. Even the most lovesick fool knows the answer to that. She will not. She cannot. Do not dream that you can keep such a secret from her either. And above all, for Lucifer's sake, do not forget that no temple on earth will have you should you choose to wed this poor creature."
"I believe I can make this work, Cam."
"You believe you and your love see eye to eye, then?"
"Yes, we are devoted to one another."
"And what is her view on eternity?"
Roland paused.
"Don't tell me you don't know."
"Fine, then, I'll tell you. Here, Roland, is the unquestionable truth about our immortality. Mortals cannot fathom it. It frightens them.
The knowledge will devour her, that she will grow old and die, and you will remain the young and strapping devil that you are."
"I could change for her. I could make myself grow old, appear to wrinkle and wither and..."
"Roland."
Cam's face soured.
"That isn't your style. Whoever she is, it'll be easier on her now, when she's no doubt young and shapely and can find another mate. Don't waste her best years. But somehow, love must be possible, just because you and Lilith couldn't.
We're not talking about me.
They stood silently and listened to the echoing of the falling water around them.
Fine, Roland said at last. Then what about Daniel and Lou?
What about them?
Cam roared into the waterfall. His face turned red with sudden fury.
If they're your models, go ask them for advice.
He shook his head, disgusted.
We all know what will become of them anyway.
What do you mean?
Now Cam turned clear green eyes on Roland, and Roland flushed to find himself being pitied.
In the end, Cam said, he will abandon her. He has no choice. He's no match for this curse. It will outlast him and undo him.
Roland's wings bristled.
You're wrong. You have grown too close to Lucifer.
That couldn't be further from the truth, Cam hooted.
But when he spun around, Roland noticed the branding on the back of his neck. The tattoo reached just beyond the high collar of his cloak. Unmistakable.
You wear his mark now?
Roland's voice trembled. He didn't have one. Would never hope to be offered one. Lucifer only branded certain demons, demons with whom he wanted a special relationship.
Cam, you can't...
Cam caught Roland's face in his hand and held tight. They stood close, locked in an intimate grip. Roland didn't know if they were enemies or friends.
Who came to whom to ask for advice, Roland? We are not talking about me and the way I conduct myself. We are talking about you and the pitiful love story that you are going to have to end.
There must be a way to...
Face it! You wouldn't have come to me if you didn't already know the answer.
Of all the things that Cam had told him that day at the waterfall, his parting words were the hardest ones. Yes, Roland had already known the answer he sought. He just hoped that someone would tell him otherwise and save him from having to do what had to be done. When he came back to tell her, Rosaline seemed already to know. He climbed to her balcony, but she did not rush to kiss him. Her face stiffened in suspicion as soon as he came into her chambers.
I sense a change in you.
Her voice was cold with fear.
What is it?
Roland's body ached when he saw her look so sad. He did not want to lie to her, but he could not find the words.
Oh, Rosaline, there is so much I could tell you.
Then, as if Rosaline remembered his loquacious poems, she demanded.
Answer me in one word. What does our future hold?
That had been more than 1,000 years ago. And still, Roland cringed now, thinking back on what he told her. He wished he could smash this memory and the moment with it. But it had happened, and you couldn't change the past. He had given Rosaline her one word.
Farewell.
He'd wanted to say, forever. But Cam had spoken truly. Forever wasn't possible between a woman and a fallen angel. He'd fled before she could beg him not to go. He thought he was being valiant, but life had taught him that he wasn't. He was devastated and scared. After that, Roland had only seen her once more, 2 weeks later, when he'd hovered out of sight of her castle window and watched his love weep for one full hour. After that, he vowed never to cause anyone pain in love. He disappeared. It became his way. Roland brushed something from his cheek and was stunned to find it was a tear. Though he'd wiped 1,000,000 briny drops from other cheeks, he could not recall a time when he himself had cried. He thought of Lucinda and Daniel, of their eternal devotion to each other. They did not walk away from their mistakes, and over the centuries, they had made many of them. They returned to those mistakes, revisited them, worked through them, until something had at last clicked in this final life when she was reincarnated as Lucinda Price. It was what had driven her to flee into her past, to find the solution to the curse, so that she and Daniel could be together. They would always be together, always have each other, no matter what. Roland had no one. Silently, he rose to his feet and made his own Valentine's pledge. He would scale the wall to Rosaline again and redeem himself the only way he knew how. 4. Love's Pupil. Back up the outer wall, a second slink along the stone parapet, and then the final sheer ascent to the turret and its balcony, and Rosaline once more. By the time Roland again reached the balcony, the sun was low in the sky, casting long shadows over his shoulders. Announcers shifted and coiled within the shadows, a way of whispering, "We are here." But they left Roland alone. The temperature had dropped, and now the air carried hints of smoke and a coming frost. He imagined entering the turret via the balcony, stealing through the twilight dark halls until he found her in her room, and then he pictured her expression. Images of her staggering backward in amazement, joy playing on her face, hands clenched to her exquisite breast. But what if she was angry? Still angry, 5 years later. It was possible. He shouldn't rule it out. They'd shared something rare and beautiful, and he'd learned that women felt deeply when it came to love. They felt love in ways Roland could never understand, as if their hearts had extra chambers, vast infinites where love could stay and never leave. What was he doing here? The wind wove its way beneath his steel armor. He shouldn't be here. This part of his life was over. Cam might have been wrong about love, but he wasn't wrong about how time had changed Roland. He should climb back down, get on his horse, and find Daniel. Only, he couldn't. What could he do? He could grovel. He could drop to his knees and bow before her, beg for forgiveness. He could, and he would. Until this moment, he had not even realized he wanted her forgiveness. He was near the balcony now, trembling. Was he nervous or excited? He'd come this far, and still he didn't know what he would say. A few lines of a poem formed in the habit's corner of his heart. "Let no face reside in mind but the face of Rosaline." No, this was where he'd gotten into trouble with her before. She didn't need bad poetry. She needed bodily, reciprocal love. Could Roland give that to her now? The red curtain rustled in the wind, then parted at the bold touch of his fingers. He concealed himself behind the stone wall, but craned his neck until his gaze entered the bedroom where he used to sit with her. Rosaline. She was glorious, sitting in a wooden chair in the corner, singing under her breath. Her face was older, but the years had been kind. She had grown from Roland's girl into a beautiful young woman. She was glowing. She was spectacular. Yes, Roland knew he had made a mistake. He'd been green at love and foolish, cynical and unsure that what they had could last. Too quick to heed Cam's bitter pronouncements. But look at Luce and Daniel. They had shown Roland that love could survive even the harshest of punishments. And maybe everything up until this moment, accidentally coming back to this era, agreeing to help Shelby and Miles, riding past Rosaline's old castle, had happened for a reason. He was being given a second chance at love. This time, he'd follow his heart. He was ready to bound in through the open window. But wait. Rosaline was not singing to herself. Roland blinked, looking again. She had an audience,
a small child swaddled in a feather quilt. The child was nursing. Rosaline was a mother. Rosaline was some man's wife. Roland's body stiffened, and a small gasp escaped his lips. He should have been relieved to see her looking so well, the happiest she'd ever looked, but all he felt was powerfully lonely. He rolled heavily away from the balcony door, slamming his back against the tower's curved wall. What kind of man had taken the place Roland never should have left? He dared another look inside, watched as Rosaline got up from the chair and laid the baby in its wooden cradle. Roland closed his eyes and listened to her footsteps fading like a song as she padded out of the room and down the hallway. This couldn't be the way it ended, his last sight of love. Fool, fool to come back, fool not to leave well enough alone. Instinctively, he followed her, crawling along the turret's shallow ledge to the next window. He gripped the wall with his abraded fingers. This chamber, next to the room where he'd seen Rosaline, used to belong to her brother, Geoffrey. But when Roland leaned in to peek through the curved pane, there were women's clothes hanging by the window. He heard a man's low voice, and then, in reply, Rosaline's. A young man sat with his back to Roland at the edge of a damask-covered bed. When he turned his head, his profile was handsome, but not devastatingly so. Smooth brown hair, freckled skin, an honest, sloping nose. A woman lay sprawled across him on the bed, her blonde head nestled in his lap, in the casual way of two people who were as comfortable with each other's limbs as they were with their own. She was weeping. She was Rosaline.
"But why, Alexander?"
When she raised her tear-streaked face to look at him, Roland's heart caught in his throat. Alexander, her husband, stroked his wife's tangled blonde hair.
"My love."
He kissed her nose, the last place Roland would have gone had he had access to those lips.
"My horse is saddled. The men await me at the barracks. You know that I must leave before nightfall to join them."
Rosaline gripped the white sleeve of his undershirt and sobbed.
"My father has 1,000 knights who can take your place. I pray you, do not leave me. Do not leave us to go and fight."
"Your father has already been too generous. Why should another man take my place when I am young and able? It is my duty, Rosaline. I must go. When our crusade is done, I will return to you."
She shook her head, her cheeks pink with fury.
"I cannot bear to lose you. I cannot live without you."
Roland's heart stuttered at the words.
"You won't have to," Alexander said. "I give you my word. I shall return."
He rose from the bed, helping his wife to her feet. Roland noticed, with renewed jealousy, that she was pregnant with another child. Her belly protruded under the fine, rucked gown. She rested her hands on it, despondent. Roland would never be able to leave her in a state like that. How could this man go off to war? What war mattered in the face of love's obligations? Any heartache she might have felt for Roland 5 years ago paled in comparison to this, because this man was not only her lover and her husband, he was also the father of her children. Roland's heart sagged. He could not abide this. He thought of all those years between this medieval heartbreak and the present he'd come back from, the centuries he'd spent on the moon, wandering lost through its crags and pox, abandoning his duties, just trying to forget he'd ever seen her. He thought of the void of time he'd surrendered inside the portal that connected July to September, abandoning everything the way he had abandoned Rosaline. But now he knew that no matter how long his infinity lasted, he would never forget her tears. What a narcissistic fool he had been. She didn't need his apology. To apologize to her now would be wholly selfish, just Roland seeking relief for his guilty conscience.
and opening her wounds anew. There was nothing he could do or be for Rosaline anymore. Or almost nothing. The young man looked lanky and uncoordinated as he approached the stable where Roland waited. He carried his helmet in his hand, leaving his face exposed. Roland studied it. He hated and respected this man, who clearly felt both obligated and reluctant to fight. Could honor and duty mean more to him than love? Or maybe this confusion of honor and duty was love. Paradoxes piled higher than the furthest reaches of the stars. Who would want to go to war and leave a loving family?
Soldier,
Roland called to Alexander when he was close enough to recognize the torment in his eyes.
You are Alexander, kin of my Lord John, who holds the title of this fief. And who are you?
Alexander stepped across the threshold of the stable. His pale brown eyes narrowed as he took in Roland's formal armor.
What battle have you come from, dressed like that? I've been sent here to take your place in the campaign.
Alexander stopped.
My wife sent you? Her father?
He shook his head.
Step aside, soldier. Let me ride on. Indeed, I will not. Your assignment has changed. You know the terrain in this vicinity better than most. Dangerous times may be upon us if the battle does not favor us in the north. If we retreat, you will be needed here to guard the city from intruders.
Alexander tilted his head.
Show your face, soldier, for I do not trust a man who hides behind a mask. My face is no concern of yours. Who are you? A man who knows that your duty is here, among your family. All the spoils of war matter not in the face of true love and familial honor. Now, stand down, if you wish to live.
Alexander let out a soft laugh, but then his expression changed into something harder. He drew his sword.
Let's have it, then.
Roland should have expected this, and yet it galled him. How could this man be so intent on leaving her? Roland would never leave her. And yet, of course, he already had. Abandoned his one true love like a callous, stupid fool. He'd been alone ever since. Solitude was one thing, but it warped into ugly, wretched loneliness after the soul had tasted love. No man should be allowed to make the same mistake. Even through his jealousy, Roland could see that. It fell to him to stop Alexander. He swallowed, sighed inwardly, and drew his sword. It was a meter long and as sharp as the pain stabbing his heart at having to confront this man.
Soldier,
Roland said flatly.
I do not jest.
The man advanced, waving his sword awkwardly. Roland deflected it with an effortless flick of the wrist. The blades clashed dully. Alexander slid earthward with the lightest guidance from Roland's blade until it glanced off the wet hay on the floor of the stable.
Why would you so willingly ride to your own death? Roland asked.
Alexander grunted and lurched back into fighting position, raising his blade chest high.
I am not a coward.
Perhaps not, but he was exceptionally unskilled. He'd probably picked up some swordsmanship as a child, jousting at haystacks at summer festivals with his boyhood friends. He was no soldier. He'd be dead in an hour on the front. Or Roland could kill him now. In that moment, he had a vision of his blade swinging deftly down on this man's bare neck. The shock of a severed spine and the slick red blood dripping from the steel onto the dirt. How easy to end this man's short life. Take his place up in that tower and love her as she needed to be loved. Roland knew how to do it now. But then he blinked and saw Rosaline, the baby.
Do not slaughter, he reminded himself. Only persuade.
He leaped forward lightly, swinging his sword toward Alexander, who scrambled backward, spinning wildly away. This time, he avoided Roland's blade by sheer luck. Roland laughed, and his laughter tasted bitter.
"I am offering you a boon, soldier, and I promise you, I follow a higher command than your liege. Know that I will not dishonor your intentions. Let me go to war for you." "You speak in riddles."
Alexander's fear had stretched the skin around his mouth tight as a leather drum.
"You cannot replace me."
"Yes,"
Roland said, seething.
"If nothing else, at least I know that."
In a burst of violence, Roland forgot his purpose. He went at Alexander with the fury of a lover scorned. In the face of Roland's blade, Alexander stood rigid, sword extended. To his credit, he did not back away. But with another clash of their swords, Roland had disarmed Alexander. He held his blade's tip at the young man's heaving throat.
"A true knight would yield. He would accept my offer and serve his people here, protecting his home and his neighbors when they need protection."
Roland swallowed.
"Do you yield, sir?"
Alexander gasped for air, unable to speak. He kept casting his eyes downward to the blade at his neck. He was terrified. He nodded. He would yield. A calm came over Roland, and he let himself close his eyes. He and this pale mortal, Alexander, loved the same bright thing. They could not be enemies. It was then that Roland chose his side. He would not spare Alexander's life for Alexander's sake, but for Rosaline's.
"You are a braver man than I."
And it was true, for Alexander had been strong enough to love Rosaline when Roland was too afraid.
"Embrace the luck I give you this night, and return to your family."
He had to work to keep his voice steady.
"Kiss your wife and raise your children. That is honor."
They held each other's gaze for a long, tense moment, until Roland began to feel that Alexander could see through the slit in his visor. How could Alexander not feel the ache in the air between them? How could he not sense how close Roland had come to killing him and taking his place? Roland withdrew his sword from Alexander's neck. He sheathed his weapon, mounted his horse, and rode out of the stable into the night. The road was bare and blue in the moonlight. Roland headed north. He still needed to find Daniel. At least one love should be redeemed in this joust with time. For a quarter of an hour, Roland lost himself in thoughts of Rosaline, but the memory was too painful to indulge for long. His eyes refocused on the road when he saw a rider galloping toward him on a coal-black horse. Even in the darkness, there was something strange and yet familiar about the knight's armor. For a moment, Roland wondered whether it was his own former self, but when the knight put up a hand to slow Roland's ride, his gestures were more urgent than Roland's would have been. They stopped before one another, their horses whickering as they circled, breathing frost.
"You come from yonder estate."
The knight's voice boomed across the road as he pointed toward the castle in the distance. He must have thought Roland was Alexander. Had this knight been sent to escort Alexander to the front?
Yes,
Roland stammered.
I am a replacement for...
Roland? The soldier's voice changed from what Roland realized was a hoarse, affected boom into something effervescent and fantastically charming. The knight threw off his helmet. Black hair rolled like rapids down the suit of armor, and then, in the moonlight, Roland saw the face he'd known better than any other since the dawn of time.
"Arian!"
They leaped from their horses and into each other's arms. Roland didn't know how long it had been since his medieval self had seen this medieval Arian, but the emotional battle he'd just survived made it feel like centuries had passed since he'd last seen a friend.
He spun the wiry angel around. Her wings bloomed out of slits in her armor, and Roland envied her their freedom. Of course her clothes would be tailored for wings. All of them had been, back then. Roland felt caged in his borrowed metal suit, but he didn't want to complain to Arion. She did not know yet that he was an anachronism, and he wanted to keep it that way. He was so glad to see her. The moonlight shone like a spotlight on his friend's white skin. When she turned her head, Roland gasped. A horrific burn glistened on the left side of her neck. The skin was marbled, knotted, bleeding, the most gruesome kind of wound. Roland recoiled without meaning to, making Arion self-conscious. She reached up to cover the wound, but groaned when her fingers grazed it. Roland had seen the scar 1,000 times in future encounters with Arion, but its origin remained a mystery to him. Only one thing could hurt an angel that way, but he'd never known how to ask her about it. The wound was fresh now, like a rash of flames across her neck. She must have sustained the injury only recently.
Arion, what happened to you?
She looked away, not meaning to give Roland an even clearer view of her ravaged skin. She sniffed. Love is hell.
But...
Roland closed his eyes, hearing the line repeating itself in his mind.
An angel's form cannot be marred, except by...
Arion looked away in shame, and Roland drew her to him.
Oh, Arion,
he cried, clasping his arms around her waist, his eyes drawn to and repelled by her neck. He could not embrace her as he wanted to, could not squeeze away the pain.
I ache for you.
She nodded. She knew. She'd never liked to cry. She said, I've just come from seeing Daniel.
I was on my way to meet him,
Roland said, breathless with the luck of it.
His presence is required at St. Valentine's Fair.
He rides to town this evening. He may well be there already. Lucinda will be happy, at least.
Yes,
Roland said, remembering more clearly now.
You were the knight who came to deliver that message to the others in the camp. It wasn't me. You forged the king's decree that told the men to take their Valentine's leave.
Arion crossed her arms over her chest. How did you know that?
Clairvoyant.
He was surprised to find himself smiling. It was enough to have her here, his dearest friend. It made this journey into his past heartbreak a little less bleak. Roland picked up Arion's helmet, helped her back onto her horse. He mounted and dropped his visor once again. Side by side, the two knights rode for the city. Sometimes love was not about winning, but about wise sacrifice and the reliability of friends like Arion. Friendship, Roland realized, was its very own kind of love. Burning Love. The Valentine of Arion. 1. The Secret. Arion looked out at the time-scented Tuscan morning and sighed. She was sprawled on green velvet grass, propped on her elbows with her chin in her palms, relishing the unseasonable warmth and the sensation of soft fingers running through her long, dark hair. This was how Arion and Tess spent their rare afternoons together. One girl braided, the other spun stories. Then they switched roles. Once there was an extraordinary angel, Arion began, turning her head to the side so Tess could sweep the hair up from her neck. Tess was better at braiding than Arion. She would sit beside Arion with a basket of forest wildflowers in her lap. She'd lean over Arion's narrow back and weave tight plaits into the angel's thick hair. She'd pin the braids so they zigzagged across Arion's scalp until she looked like Medusa, which was Arion's favorite style. Arion, on the other hand, was lucky to get Tess's wild red mop into a single crooked braid. She'd pull and tug and wrestle the comb through Tess's locks until Tess yelped in pain. But Arian was better at storytelling. And what would braiding be without a good story? No fun at all. Arian closed her eyes and moaned as Tess's fingernails swiveled up her scalp. Nothing felt so good as a lover's touch. Arian? Yes. Her eyes opened, her gaze drifting over the pasture, where dairy cows loafed on the farm's 200 acres. These were her favorite moments, quiet and uncomplicated, just the two of them. It was late in the afternoon. Most of the milkmaids who worked on the farm where Arian had taken her employment were already back at their cottages. She'd chosen this job because it wasn't far from Lucinda, who, in this lifetime, had grown up in an English fiefdom a few minutes' fly north. Generally, Daniel felt stifled by the presence of Arian and the other angels, tasked with watching over him. But from the dairy, Arian could give him space and still fly to him and Lucinda quickly, if needed. Besides, Arian enjoyed dipping into a mortal lifestyle every once in a while. It felt good to be given work on the dairy, to satisfy a boss. Tess never understood that urge, but then, Tess's master was a little more demanding than the throne. It was rare to have a stolen moment with Tess. Her visits to the dairy, to this part of the world in general, never came quickly or lasted long enough. Arian didn't like to imagine the darkness that awaited Tess as soon as they said goodbye, or the master, who hated to see Tess straying from his realm. "Don't think about him," Arian chided herself. "Not when Tess is by your side, and there is no need to question your love." Yes, Tess was by her side, and the grass beneath was so soft, the air of the farm so perfumed with wildflowers, that Arian could have wafted into the nurturing bosom of a reassuring dream. But the story. Tess loved her stories. "Where was I?" Arian asked. "Oh, I don't remember." Tess sounded distracted. Her fingernail scraped Arian's neck as she scooped up a section of hair. "Ouch!" Arian rubbed her neck. Tess didn't remember? But Arian was the one who got lost in her thoughts, not Tess. "Is something wrong, love?" "No," Tess said quickly. "You were starting some story, and extraordinary, yes," Arian said happily. "An extraordinary angel. Her name was Arian." Tess tugged her hair. "Another one about you?" She was laughing, but her laughter sounded distant, as if she had already flown far away. "You're in it, too. Just wait." Arian rolled onto her side to face Tess. The arm Tess had been braiding with slid down across Arian's hip. Tess wore a white cotton gown with a narrow bodice and short, ruffled white sleeves. She had bursts of freckles on her shoulders, which Arian thought looked like galaxies of stars. Her eyes were barely darker than Arian's startling pale blue irises. She was the most beautiful creature Arian had ever met. "And what was so extraordinary about this angel?" Tess asked after a moment, picking up her cue. "Oh, where to begin? There were so many extraordinary things about her." Arian flicked her head, musing on an inspired direction in which to take her tale. She could feel the unbound braid scissoring loose on the side of her head. "Ah, Arian," Tess said, "you've ruined it. I can't help it if my hair has other plans. And maybe yours does, too." Arian reached for the ribbon tied around Tess's long red braid. But the girl was too quick. She scrambled backward in the grass like a crab, laughing as Arian rose to her feet and chased after her. "This most extraordinary angel," she called after Tess, who dashed through the high grass in the bracing February wind, "had the most disgusting nest of tangles in her hair. She was famous for it, far and wide. Tangle Locks, some called her." Arian high-stepped, her hands raised, her fingers wiggling to evoke her hair. Cities vanished in her mighty mane. Whole armies were swept up in her snarls. Grown men wept and were lost in the black abyss of her serpentine tresses. Then Arion tripped over the long hem of her shapeless milkmaid's gown and went down hard onto the ground. On all fours, she looked up at Tess, who'd stopped between Arion and the sun, a halo of light circling her red hair. Tess leaned down to help Arion up, her hands soft around Arion's wrists. "Until one day?" Arion went to rub her muddy palms on the front of her dress. Tess slapped them away and produced from her stringed pocket a cotton handkerchief. "One day, this angel met someone who changed her life." Tess lifted her chin a bit. She was listening. "This person was a little devil," Arion said. "She was rather serious, always thwarting Tanglelox's pranks, always mocking her ingenuity, always reminding Tanglelox that some things were more important than plain old hair." Unexpectedly, Tess turned away. She sat down in the grass with her back to Arion. Perhaps she'd found her character's introduction unflattering. But there was more to come. Every story required a turning point, an element of surprise. Arion sprawled across Tess's stretched-out legs and propped herself up on one elbow in the grass. With her other hand, she reached to uncross the arms Tess had fixed firmly over her chest. But even with her hands clasped in her lover's, Tess's eyes would not be wrested from the pale yellow wildflower in the grass.
"Abandon this silly story, Arion," she spoke as if in a trance. "I am not in the mood for it today."
"Oh, but wait! I'm just getting warmed up." Arion furrowed her brow. "In so many ways, the seeming adversary was the dire opposite of Tanglelox. Her hair was a red dandelion poof." Arion stroked Tess's hair. "Her skin was a pale canvas that burned at the slightest touch of the sun." She ran her finger down Tess's smooth, bare arm.
"Arion. But the creature was a demon with a comb, and in her hands were tamed the destructive locks. This person's nature, unlike the angel's, was..."
"Enough," Tess snapped, jerking her gaze away and toward a shallow, pebble-lined stream at the edge of the pasture.
"I'm tired of fairy tales."
She stood up, and Arion scrambled to join her.
"It's not a fairy tale," Arion insisted, ignoring the goosebumps she felt rising on her skin.
She sat up straight and tilted her head at Tess.
"The fact that we're here together
is only a sign that he wasn't paying attention."
"Wasn't?"
A cold wind crept over the meadow.
"He has given me an ultimatum."
The blood drained from Arion's cheeks, and with it went the brilliant colors in the meadow. The blue sky dimmed, the grass lost its verve. Even Tess's hair seemed pale. Arion had known this moment was coming, had known it ever since the start, but still it took her breath away. Tess bore the black starburst tattoo on the back of her neck, the one Lucifer branded on his innermost circle of demons.
"He knows, and now he wants me back."
There was ice in Tess's voice, ice that seemed to creep across Arion's soul.
"But you just got here."
Arion felt like running to her love, falling at Tess's feet and weeping, but she just stared down at her hands.
"I don't want you to leave. I hate it when you go away."
"Arion."
Tess took a step toward her, but Arion flinched, enraged.
"It's not his business to say what we can and can't do. What kind of monster boasts so incessantly about free will, and yet won't let you be free to follow your own heart?"
"I don't have a choice about this."
"Yes, you do," Arion said. "You just won't make it."
When Tess didn't answer, Harrion's chest heaved with the initial wave of a tsunami-sized sob. She felt so ashamed. She turned and ran across the pasture. She ran along the stream bed and up the soft slope of grass at the western edge of the farm. She trampled through her mistress's herb garden, unable to see the time through her tears. She could hear Tess running after her, her soft footsteps catching up. But Arion did not stop until she'd reached the door of the old barn, where tomorrow morning she would rise just before dawn to do the milking. She threw herself against the rough wood wall of the barn and let the sobs come. Tess hugged Arion from behind, her red braid swinging over Arion's shoulder. She laid her head between Arion's shoulder blades, and they stood like that, both of them crying, for a quiet moment.